Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently with offline maps and on-trail navigation. Download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Hey, I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
Maybe you know us from our daily YouTube show, Good Mythical Morning.
But this is a little trailer for our podcast, Ear Biscuits, where two lifelong friends talk about life for a long time.
And nothing is off limits. We talk about our sex lives, our mental health journeys, but we try to never take ourselves too seriously.
So we invite you to not do the same, or to do the same. We invite you to listen. Follow and listen to Ear Biscuits.
Now for free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.
I do want to bring in a guest right now talking with us about the big doings. It'll be from literally Texas on sort of a diagonal path all the way up toward Canada, including Erie, Pennsylvania, areas that will be able to see the eclipse on April the 8th. And joining us right now is Dr. John Mulcahy. He is with the Carnegie Science Institute, and he is the deputy for science there, and also the director for the Crawford Greenwald Chair, the Carnegie Science Observatories. That means one main campus in Pasadena, another in the Southern Hemisphere in Chile, and he joins us right now on KDK. Dr. Mulcahy, thank you very much for being here. How are you?
I'm doing great, Rick. Hope everybody's doing great.
We are. We've had an awful lot of rain today, and I know that there's a lot of people who are crossing their fingers and hoping for clear skies next week as the eclipse will be seen on the 8th of April. But help us to understand, from your standpoint, you have a PhD in astrophysics. You spent all this time in terms of looking at these amazing happenings in space, and yet something like an eclipse may not be the same as taking a giant Magellan telescope and looking out into the Milky Way, but there has to be something that comes. What can you glean from this?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. People would think that we understand the sun very well, but there's actually still a lot we don't know about the sun. And a total solar eclipse, like the one that'll happen on Monday, gives us a chance to study parts of the sun that we normally don't see, particularly the moon. During the totality, the moon will block the sun's surface, allowing us to see the extended atmosphere of the sun. We call this the corona, and it's really the only time we can see it from Earth. So during these few minutes of totality, we get kind of a glimpse at how the atmosphere of the sun works, and it's super important. And so that's why the eclipse is so exciting to many astronomers.
How will you and other astronomers be viewing it? Because obviously, you know, for people here, and they're saying protect your eyes, and we've had the ophthalmologist come on and talk about what can happen to the retina and all those sorts of things. But how will you astronomically be viewing this? How will you be looking at it?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'm happy to hear that you've had those special eye specialists in, because we want to make sure people are very safe, of course. And the answer is, except for the few moments of totality, one should never look at the sun directly. We do have special telescopes that have special filters that allow us to study the sun up until totality. During totality, if you are in the path of totality, and Pittsburgh is not, but you know, Erie and other places, Cleveland nearby are, in those areas, during totality, one can actually remove your glasses and look at the sun for those brief few moments, because you're not seeing the surface. And so during that time, we'll be taking images, taking pictures to study that kind of extended atmosphere of the sun. But only during those few minutes of totality. The rest of the time, you have to have the protective gear on, as you've noted.
What exactly do you hope to learn about the corona, about the outer atmosphere of the sun? Is it a matter of saying, you know, how much of it is actually the sun and how much of that is, you know, sort of fingers, if you will, reaching out from the surface, or is there something more to it than that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting question. I think the interesting thing about the corona is it's the component that kind of extends the sun out into the solar system. And eventually that same stuff that comes off out of the corona of the sun ends up here at Earth and causes things like the northern lights. And so so we're very interested because this is the component of the sun that actually interacts with us. One thing we'll be doing during the eclipse is we'll be monitoring how this atmosphere changes over very short time periods of even seconds or minutes. And the way we're going to do this is we have many scientists lined up along the path of totality who will be taking images, and that will kind of give us a view of over the course of, say, a half an hour or 45 minutes, how this component of the sun has changed. And so that's pretty exciting.
Dr. John Mulcahy joining us here on KDKA. He is with Carnegie Science. Now, a lot of people here in Pittsburgh certainly know Andrew Carnegie. They know of the libraries. They know of all the work in Carnegie Mellon, you know, the names and things like that. Is there any sort of correlation between the company and the organization that you work for and what we know here in Pittsburgh?
Oh, absolutely. And I visited Pittsburgh and got to see, you know, it's obviously the center of all things Carnegie.
Yes.
But one of the many wonderful things he did, besides all the libraries and the universities and everything that were set up, is he set up our Carnegie Science is an institution dedicated to basic research. And so it was, in fact, funded by Andrew Carnegie. So his initial contribution back between 1902 and 1910 is what pays me and pays other people to study the universe and study things like corals. And we have other people studying earthquakes and all sorts of basic science. You know, his philanthropy was amazing, as you know, in Pittsburgh, but elsewhere. So, you know, his legacy lives on all these years later.
Is there something to be learned in Dallas that would be different than something that might be learned in, say, Erie, Pennsylvania? You mentioned that you're going to have scientists all along that path of totality. Why so?
Well, I think it is just because the difference is totality will happen here. I will be in Dallas during the eclipse, where the weather's looking a little dicey here, too. We're hoping it'll improve. But, you know, we'll see totality here in Dallas. And then it won't be till significantly later, a half hour, 45 minutes later, that it will hit your part of the country. And so we'll be curious to see how has the corona changed in that little bit of period. And it's surprising that we don't know more. But as I said, it's very difficult for us to study this component except during these few minutes of totality.
So can you count on taking sort of one image in Dallas and another one in Arkansas and another one in Erie and comparing those side by side and glean something from it?
That's right. Actually, it will be probably thousands of images taken. And one thing I was going to point out is that although professional astronomers like myself will be doing this data, we actually will be relying on many what we call citizen scientists. These are amateur astronomers who will also be imaging the sun, and they will also send us their images. And that way we'll have kind of a collection along the whole path from Mexico all the way up through Canada, getting us a beautiful time sequence of how the sun has varied. So that'll be very exciting. And by the way, that has never really been done, this eclipse is going to be the first time we've done that, at least at this level.
So how then are those citizen scientists selected? Or maybe they're not. Maybe they just voluntarily choose to send things to you for the greater good.
Yeah, that's right. There are lots of ways. So citizen scientists become very popular, particularly in astronomy. And there are many, many amateur astronomers out there. I used to be one myself before I became a professional. And they... And so most of them know about this, and there've been a lot of advertisement. We've reached out to people via, you know, astronomy magazines, Sky and Telescope, and other magazines that amateur astronomers would read. And this is a chance for all of them to kind of participate and do a little bit of science. So it's very exciting.
How long until you are able to make some definitive declarations about what you learned? Meaning, how long will it take, you know, once you get back, once you start to look at these images, once you start to consult with other people in the field, how long until you think you'll be able to say, hey, this is what we learned from this path of totality and the total solar eclipse?
That's a great question. I think there'll be some preliminary stuff that one can learn right away from just even a quick comparison of how it looked, for instance, in Mexico at the start of the eclipse and, say, you know, in Cleveland or something. But to really do proper analysis, you know, it takes quite a long time. Writing scientific papers, often, you know, for some projects I've been on, it's taken 2 to 3 years. Mm. And we'll see. But the good thing is once we have the data, it'll be available and many scientists will be able to use it.
Well, thank you very, very much for being here and for sharing again the philanthropy of Andrew Carnegie and what he has done and what he continues to do for scientific endeavors like what you're doing at Carnegie Science and what we know here at the Carnegie Science Center and the universities, et cetera. Thank you very, very much for being here. And I know that next week is going to be a very, very busy week for you, but we can't wait to have you back on again and start to find out some of the things that you learned from those observations. All right.
I look forward to that too. Thanks, Rick.
Excellent. Dr. John Mulcahy joining us here on The Voice of Pittsburgh, KDKA.
Hey, I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
Maybe you know us from our daily YouTube show, Good Mythical Morning.
But this is a little trailer for our podcast, Ear Biscuits, where two lifelong friends talk about life for a long time.
And nothing is off limits. We talk about our sex lives, our mental health journeys, but we try to never take ourselves too seriously.
So we invite you to not do the same, or to do the same. We invite you to listen. Follow and listen to Ear Biscuits.
Now for free on the Odyssey app and everywhere you get your podcasts.